Thank you for joining me this afternoon. I know it's a long day on day two. You've made it to the last session time. After this, we have a party. So we'll have a little bit of fun in here. We'll have a lot more fun coming up maybe in an hour outside if it's not raining. So this afternoon, I'm going to talk about dynamic user assistance. So the idea of dynamically customizing content based on either user goals, user types, or user needs. And I'll show you quite a few live examples as we go through the presentation. All right. So we'll look at how to customize content dynamically for accessibility based on language preference, product version, frequency of use, and job role. Now, you may have other reasons you want to adjust the content. I'm just using these as very common examples, but the techniques would apply no matter how you want to customize the content. And at the end, once we've talked about different options, design-wise, technology-wise, then I'll show you how you can save the settings. So if someone comes in and they've said, hey, this is me, I'm this type of user, I want it in this language, and they specify that, next time they come in, they don't have to specify it again because that's annoying. So we can save it. Everything I show you will be in a sample project, and I'll make that available. The presentation's already available, of course, in this app. It's also on my website. But I like to customize the sample projects based on questions. So as an extra incentive, if you ask a question, I will probably update it with your answer, and it'll be in there, and you can download a live example answering your question. If you want to ask a question, there's even a microphone. So feel free to ask questions. The purpose of the microphone, of course, is if you ask a question on the mic, as they're recording the sessions, it gets recorded. All right, great. So feel free to ask questions as we go. We're going to start with accessibility. And the three things I want to focus on with accessibility are font size, contrast, and color distinction. So people that are colorblind, adapting design so that they can still see the content. Now, a simple example is you have a design. I run into this all the time. And a company will say, hey, you can even, not to pick on this because I think Madcap's color scheme for the conference is great. But if I were designing with sort of a green and a blue and I had to use both of those colors, there could be people that can't tell the difference between the green and the blue. So if I made, say, the background color dark blue like that and the links were a dark green, some people might not see the links. They might just think it's black text. So that's just an example that we'll look at. How do we adapt it? All right, so let's take a look at font size first. Okay, so the guidelines for font size, just like we have Section 8, how many of you have heard of Section 508 before? Okay, so Section 508 is a U.S. thing. But internationally, the W3C has guidelines as well, and they match up to Section 508. So if you know the Section 508 guidelines, I'm just showing the international ones. So the guideline for font size says that your text certainly needs to be resizable, but specifically, it can be resized 200%, so twice the size that needs to be available to people. All right. Some industry standards, if you're curious how big should my content be, and this is also part of the standard, the recommendation is about one rim or 12 point, depending on your measurement unit, for body text. And headings, typically 1.2 to 1.5 rim, or 14 to 18 point. Now, many people, when they look at that, think, oh, that's way bigger than my content right now. It's not unusual. It's maybe horrifying, but it's not unusual that people make body text 8 point, which is unbelievably small on a computer screen, but I've seen that many times. So that's a starting point. At least make your content big enough they can read it in the first place, but they also might need to make it even bigger. I rarely hear users say the text is too big. All right, so some examples of allowing the user to change the font size. We'll look at two. Okay, so here's one technique. Many of you are probably thinking, that's part of the browser. I don't need to put something in there as part of the browser. Sure. You still would need to tell someone how to change it. So I bet pretty much everyone in the room knows that you can change the font size in your browser. But if I were to have a little pop quiz and say, okay, who can tell me how to do it off the top of your head, probably most of us would struggle with that. And, of course, it's different in every browser. The steps are always different. So here's one approach. How about just documenting and telling them how to do it in their browser? That's a solution. That's a valid solution that would meet the guideline. And you could even use this as a starting point. So the W3C, that's how they meet their own guideline. They just provide the instructions. All right, so you could do it that way. It may not look the fanciest here, but the information is there. That's why I said you could use it as a starting point. I think we could design this a little bit nicer. So that's option one. The other option, the Medicare site. And this is a classic example. So it may be a little small up there, but I'll tell you what it says. At the very, very top, you can change the language, which we'll talk about later. But right beside it, there's a little A, and let's say a medium-sized A, and a big A. And as you click them, of course, it gets a little bit bigger, normal size, small. So that's the traditional design. All right, so here's same thing in Flare, just bigger so you can see it. So here's a little demo I put in here. You can make it small. You can make it big. Now, if you're wondering, how do you do that? I bet it's going to be a whole bunch of code I've got to figure out. It's not that bad. So here's the code. It's CSS, so not that bad at all. Now, first you need to define, you know, here's how big I want the content to be. When you put a font size in the body tag, that becomes the base. So it's all scaling off of that base. So for like a presentation, if I come in and the projector is kind of old and things are too big, I can just change that body and then everything scales proportionally. So if I came in the room, as I already did before you guys got here, and looked at it and said, wow, it's too big, I can make that say 0.9 and then everything would get 10% smaller. So that's the base, and then we're scaling off the base with the script down here. You can use the same script. This is jQuery. But all it's doing is saying, all right, dynamically change the base to either be 0.8, 1, or 1.2. So it's just going back to that body tag and dynamically changing it when they click the A's. That's all it is. And you can certainly use jQuery in Flare. That's what Madcap uses themselves, and the skin, the menus, all the cool features, drop-downs, togglers, hotspot, all that stuff, all use jQuery. All right, the contrast. The guideline for contrast says that the color contrast for body text should be 4.5 to 1, and for headings it should be 3 to 1. Now, if you haven't dealt with this before, I think a fair question is, what in the world are you talking about? What is 3 to 1? What is 4.5 to 1? All right. There are websites I'm about to show. You go out to the website and it gives you this ratio. So you tell it your colors or even point it to your page and it'll tell you the ratio for you. So they have their own little scale that they use to measure this, but that's based on the scale, as you'll see. The accessibility guidelines actually have levels. There's a level A and an AA and an AAA, AAA. Most people, the level A is easy. So if you're thinking, well, I want to be, you know, compliant, getting to level A is maybe a day, but maybe adjustments at the most. Most people aim for level AA. Ideally, we would go for AAA. But if you're at AA, you're doing well. The AA guideline is a bit more, and they add on, so other things, if you're thinking about your actual, say, a web-based application, UI components, graphics and things, have to be at 3 to 1. So those are additional guidelines in the AA, but we're mostly concerned about body text and headings. All right, some examples so you can see this in action. All right. I like this example because it's very subtle. Okay, so with this example, their colors are sort of an orange. There's actually two shades of orange and a pretty strong blue. There's text, default text in that form. And it's a fairly bright orange. Now, especially on the screen, I'm about to change it. It's even subtle on my screen, but up there, don't be surprised. You look at it and say, I don't think it changed at all. You might not be able to see the change of the projector, but let's look at how you change it. There's accessibility up here in the menu, and I can increase contrast. It's going to become a brighter orange, which is their other color. It's almost a yellow. It's changing. Okay, so it's changing between some different oranges here. So you may have noticed a little bit of a difference. Right. Now, I put an example in here that's much easier to see, but I didn't want to only have this example because you're probably going to say, I don't work for, you know, a donut company. We don't have bright purple as our company color. Our color is a little less in your face. But here on Dunkin' Donuts' site, if we turn it on, it also has a cool transition effect. So you definitely saw that one change. All right, so that's an example of changing the contrast, two examples. All right, and maybe now you're thinking, well, no, my content's not nearly as exciting as these two. I work for a boring company. Hopefully not, but maybe you're thinking that. All right, Microsoft. They don't make donuts. They're not doing something exciting or cool, anything cooler than what we do. Does anyone work at Microsoft? I usually don't even bother to ask because I always pick on them, but just in case, I want to be ready if you're going to throw something. What I really like about this one is this is a site, you know, taking information for programmers. What is the number one thing maybe I shouldn't ask that. I won't phrase it as a question. I'm afraid to ask you. To me, programmers are notorious. They love to sit in the dark with an inverse screen. I don't know why, but they love that. I think they just do it to say, hey, I'm a programmer. Check me out. I'm different. But they love to do that. You know I'm right. So what did Microsoft knows that. So what did they do? They put this little button here that says dark mode with a little kind of moon. And you know every programmer does that. And thinks, oh, yeah. They probably look at it first and think, oh, this site's not, there's no good information there. And then suddenly they click here. Oh, this is a great site. So that's their example. All right, so how do you check this? You can use a plugin. If you want to download a plugin, then you can actually look at your design and it'll sort of actively evaluate the color scheme. So any of the plugins can do that for you. There's these analyzers. And then to test it, to get that ratio, you can use one of these sites. So you tell it the colors, or as I was saying, you can sometimes point it to a site and it'll analyze and tell you your ratio for you. So if you're doing the design at the beginning, yeah, go ahead and check it out. But if you already have a design, this is an easy way to, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, why did you pick those colors? You can say, well, you know, they meet accessibility requirements for the color difference. I just had to do that last week. I was working with someone and she was obsessed with this neon green. She said, I want all the links to be neon green. So I thought, okay, I'm going to make all links neon green. I'm going to find a topic that has like 50 links in it, show it to her, and she's going to be horrified looking at it like, I can't. My eyes. No, she looked at it and thought, oh, that's fantastic. So I was thinking, okay. There's something wrong with her. But then I went to the site and then I sent this, you know, formal email like, hey, I had, in English for you guys, it basically said, your color is too bright. It burns my eyes. I made it much darker. You're welcome. But it really said, hey, it didn't meet accessibility guidelines, so I had to adapt it. Made it sound all fancy, but... So you can do the same thing. Colorblindness, what do the guidelines say? Okay, so the guideline is basically, hey, don't just use color for something that people have to find or interact with. Because if someone can't see the color, they're not going to be able to find it. So that's, you know, that's why links are blue traditionally and underlined. Not just blue or not just underlined. There's two things. So someone that can't see the blue can still see the underline. I guess vice versa if that happened, whatever reason. Now, nowadays, people don't often, they take out the underline because that's considered hip. It's been for a while. But it's in there for a reason. It wasn't just random that people underlined them. So to have two things as an identifying element. One of them can be a color, but you shouldn't just rely on color. The AAA level would be the foreground and the background color should be something that the user can change, which you don't see that often. It wouldn't be hard to allow the user to change the color, but if you want to meet the AAA guideline, that's what you have to do. Okay, so let's look at some examples. All right, so I have two examples for you. All right, I really like this BBC site because it's very, very straightforward. So you can kind of pick. Maybe you have trouble, maybe you can't see at all, or maybe you just have trouble seeing, maybe you have dyslexia, maybe you have trouble moving the mouse. Now, if you're wondering, why does it say I can't hear well? Well, you know, this is BBC, so they'll have videos and things, and they help you adapt the videos. If there's audio in the videos, you can adapt it so you can deal with it. But another thing to think about with the hearing, it does talk about people that have trouble seeing. Someone might certainly could have trouble seeing and hearing, and if they're using a screen reader, it tells them how they could even adapt the screen reader so when they're listening to the site, they can hear it better. So they have great guidelines in here, and this is one way to handle it. Just ask some questions and then just tell them how to change things. All right, but that one's not exciting enough for you. Has anyone been to caniuse.com? It's a great site. Super useful if you're working with CSS. So if you want to use a CSS property, you can type it in, and it tells you the browser support. And where it doesn't work, it'll tell you any known workarounds. And then if you see, like, oh, what I want, let's say you want to use Flex. I talked about it yesterday. Not only does it tell you which browsers it's supported and which ones it's not, the ones that it's not, you can hover over it and it'll say, like, well, this is only used by 1% of the population. So if somebody comes back and says, hey, you're using that and it doesn't work, and say, well, only 1% of the world uses that browser. I don't think we should be designing for them. But it's, you can see here, it's very color intensive. And they use those colors to communicate, you know, does it work? Does it kind of work? Or does it work great? And down here with the near the legend of their colors, it says enable accessible colors. And you can see it is slightly changing. If you focus on this legendary, these little boxes here, you can see them change a little bit easier. Yeah, so it's a nice effect. All right, so how do you test that? How do you test for color blindness? Here's one way. This website, you can go out to this website and it'll analyze your site and it can even show you what it would look like with different types of color blindness. So you can see that. Okay, so that's the one I recommend. I will mention before we move on, there are also browser plugins that you can get that just when you open everything, you can set it to say, like, I'll just pick one. Hey, I'm red-green colorblind. And then everything you open, you would see as if you were red-green colorblind. So you can use a sort of live testing. So this is more, I have a design. Tell me if it works. The other one is just, I'm doing lots of iterative design. I want to make sure I stay within my goals for colorblindness testing. All right. So how about customizing things based on language, version, job role, frequency? And we'll talk about how we're going to actually show and hide the content based on what the user wants. We'll start with language. All right. If you work at any of these sites, I don't have a long enough arm, but give yourself a pat on the back. These are my best-in-class examples. I know at least some of these people are here. If I see you, I'm going to point you out. Okay, so let's look at some cool examples. Okay, so here's one. This company used to be named Baumgar, and they're named Beyond Trust. Okay, so here's their content in German. And they just took a very common design approach. They have a drop-down. And if you want to see this topic in English, you can change it to English. It reloaded the same topic, the English version, and they have French. So I think this is a good design approach if you're going to have, you know, several languages. I think it works well. Even with three, this is a nice approach. Another example. Well, some people, I'm sure some people in this room, you might be looking at three languages and say, I wish we only had three languages. We have 300. Well, hopefully not 300. We have 30 languages. All right. There's a lot of languages in here. So same approach, kind of a drop-down list, and you can pick the language. Let's go with this one. Okay. I'm not sure what language that is, but it's cool. All right, how about, let's go to Italy. Hey, so you can see it's changing. Maybe hard to see up here, but that is Italian. All right, so that's another approach. All right. Now, in this example, what if you just have two languages? Well, probably the most design-wise, the most common approach is to have the little flag icon. So they have the Chinese flag here, China's flag. Switch to Chinese. And then I always like it when they have the U.S. flag for English instead of the British flag. I'm a fan of that. So we'll switch back to English. I'm not afraid to say it. All right, and here's another example, also with the flag, this little German flag. Now, this one I wanted to show you. In all these examples, this is the ideal. I'm in a topic that maybe I found with Google or whatever, but I want to see this topic in another language. So it's taking me to the same information in another language. I'll show you an example of how to do that coming up. But sometimes you might think, well, you know, I don't know how to do that, or for whatever reason we can't do that. Maybe you don't have all of your... let's just say we start with English. I don't have all my English content in Chinese. I have some of it. So as a potential error checking, if that topic doesn't exist in, say, German, you could take them maybe to the home page, which is what has happened here. They don't have all this content in German, so for that particular topic, since it didn't exist, it knew to take me to the home page instead. Just a little extra smarts in it to know to do that. You don't want an error message to come up, so that's how they handle it. Some other examples. What if you need to change things more by version? Let's see how people have done that already. Okay, so on this site, if I want to see this content in a different version, they use a drop-down. There's a version drop-down. They put it in their toolbar. So if I want to see this topic maybe for version 9.6, I could change it. There it is. You can see they totally changed their design. So there it is in 9.6. The little drop-down's moved over here. Okay. On this site, I really like this one. And all these design examples I'm showing, obviously you want to pick something that goes with your current design. But you should also think about whatever it is you're changing, how important it is to the user. So what if the version is very important, being able to change the version? Or maybe you just want to brag about it. You want it to be very prominent so they know, oh, wow, I can change the version. So this one is very eye-catching. I always like it when someone has a very simple, elegant design. I thought this is very elegant. It's up at the top, in the top left, you can see it says 6.0, little box. So the user, they're going to notice that immediately. Anyone work on this site? Haven't met these people yet. Okay, so if you want to switch to 5.6 or 5.4, you can just click here. All right, and another example, another drop-down. Okay, these are all, everything I've been showing you, they're all Flare examples. All of these. They're all in the customer showcase. So if you're looking at it and say, oh, I can't do that. No, you can do it. They did it. You can do it. All right. And what about job role? From a design perspective, you know, what are some real examples? So this is one of my favorite customer examples, Clever Bridge. It's a very popular one as well. I'm not the only person that thinks it's awesome. Okay, so job role, they have a drop-down, and their two job roles are business user and developer. And the content, you can see the menu over here and the topic. Right now we're in all users. I'm going to change it to business users. I'll take it a second. Totally different. Went to a whole different site. If we would go back, I'll just open it again. It's easier. Change it to developers. Totally different site. Now, some of the other examples are going to dynamically change the topic and hide things. So if you're looking at it and saying, well, you know, I want you to see the same content, but what if they're not supposed to see, maybe a tip isn't a good example, but what if this is a call out in some way for a business user? The techniques I'm going to show when we get to the how part could just hide that tip or the picture or even items over here. And if we get deeper into this project, that is what happens. The ones with the little stars apply to different groups. So if you're not in that group, it will disappear just because it's not maybe interesting information for you. Okay, so that's one design perspective. Close those. Another interesting approach to this, it might be one of the easiest to implement, is we know that people are going to find the information mostly using the search. So using a search filter that's built into Flare, you can set up a search filter in Flare. Now typically a search filter is going to be something like, oh, I want to see only troubleshooting information or something like that. So if I set the search filter to troubleshooting, I only see topics that the Flare author has marked as troubleshooting topics. But that doesn't mean it has to be like that. The filters could be the job roles. So you could go into topics and say, these topics go with this job role, these topics go with this job role, or you could assign multiple job roles to a topic. And then if I select that search filter, I'm only searching within that subset of topics. So here are the search filters up here. And I'll read them to you since they're kind of small. Partners, developers, publishers. So if I search for all, I'm searching everybody. But if I'm a developer and I'm only interested in the developer information, I could set the filter to that and only search the developer topics. How many of you use search filters? Anyone use these? That's a pretty cool feature in Flare. Yeah, it's concept markers that make them work. That is correct. If you haven't used them before, they're not hard to use, but it is kind of weird that they're search filters, but they work with concept markers, so you have to make that association. But like everything in Flare, the help does a really good job of explaining them. All right, and here's my third example. On this site, they have a drop-down with the user groups. And I like this one, too, because it has a little icon in there for the people. It just looks kind of friendly. So in this example, the job roles are agent, supervisor, manager, designer. I'm going to pick manager. Okay. And then the information can be customized. So when we get to the how, if you said, yeah, this part doesn't apply to managers of panels or something, it could disappear. And you could, it's a little bit harder, but you could make things disappear from the menu too, if you wanted to. So we looked at quite a few visual examples, the design part of it. Let's get to the how part of things. Okay, for the how, the way that most of these work is, let's take version first. Let's say you have a version 1 and a version 2. Okay, so you could have two targets in Flare, one for version 1, one for version 2. And you publish version 1 to a folder, and you publish version 2 to a folder. You may be doing that now. All that's really happening here is it's switching the folder. If you keep the same structure, so let's say you have in your project a folder named Folder A, and a topic named Topic A, and that's in version 1 and version 2. The only thing different about the path is that, is it in version 1 or version 2? So as part of the path, there's going to be a folder for version 1, a folder for version 2. If I'm in version 1 and I say, hey, let's go to version 2, grabs the current URL, swaps out that one little piece of it, and opens the same topic. That's how it's working. Okay, so it's folder switching. It's just switching the folder. That's how job role could work. Job role, you can do some more advanced things I'm going to show you, but as far as switching between two different versions, like a version for an agent, a version for a developer, they would be in different folders because they would be different targets. Okay. Here for the language, still same thing. Typically, people use a language code, and those of you dealing with different languages are probably doing this, is extremely common. So let's say for English, as part of the path, somewhere it has EN, there's a folder named EN, and then your content's in there, and say for German, DE, and that's the only difference, that one little spot. So in this example here, that's exactly what's going on. You may not be able to see the URL, but up here in the URL, it does say EN right here. I highlight it so that it says EN. We're in the English version, of course. I put in a German flag. So that's, design-wise, that's how I want people to switch. It could have been a drop-down or whatever, but when I click this, it's going to just grab this URL using JavaScript, change that to DE, and open the same topic. Okay, so that's what it did. And then we can switch back to English. So that's all that's going on there. That'll be in the sample project. You can take the same code, and you'll see it's just a tiny little script. Now, I would add the error checking. You can easily add an error checking, so if it loads a page and it doesn't exist, then it could say, all right, let's refresh and go to probably the home page. Right? Anyone ever done something like this before? Yeah, cool. So, if we look at, I'll go into the actual topic, it'll be better. Let's go into here. I have a little bit of time to do it. So you'll see I have a script in here that loads the whole thing. Here's my script. There's the script. So there's the script in there. So all it's doing is saying, all right, grab the current URL and replace EN with DE. So whichever one it is, it uses the other one, just switches it. All right, let's look at a more advanced example. So this would be based on frequency of use. I really like this approach, and it's something the other ones I've shown you see fairly often. It's hard to find an example of frequency of use. It just gets kind of ignored. But if you think, hey, I'm making a knowledge base, okay, and you have your landing page for the knowledge base, you probably update that landing page, you know, on some sort of schedule. Some people, it depends on the content. Sometimes the landing page is updated every day, especially an internal, like, intranet site. There's something new, possibly with your content, or something very important that people need to know about. It's brand new, you put it on there, and I've even worked with groups, there's some legal requirement, and they have to go in and read it. So it's very important that they can find it. So they add it to the landing page, you know, make it really big or whatever. But the second time I come in, I've already seen that. I don't need some giant thing that says, hey, you must read this. I already read it. Why are you? It was exciting the first time. It's not exciting anymore. So this is the concept of, if I come in the first time, I might want to see different content or have it formatted a different way than the next time I come in. What if I open this website 20 times a day? I'm constantly opening it. Now, if that sounds extreme, if you're making content that's used internally by tech support, they could easily open it 20 times a day. They could open 20 times an hour. Who knows? So updating it based on first-time user, user that's been in multiple times in a day, or what if we know that they haven't been there in a long time and we could point out, like, here's what's new since the last time you were here. Not what's new just because of me, what I've added, what's new to you. Now, I can't do that. Not myself, I can't predict what you've seen. You know, I can't predict what Chris has seen or George has seen. But we can use a script. A script can know what you've opened before and what you haven't. Okay. And this is some free code you can download. There's the link to it. Here's the site. It's called Aware. It does all the hard work for you, and you can customize it. I tweaked it a little bit to make it behave better in Flare. And here's an example. I based my example on theirs just to show, you know, I didn't want to customize it all. So it's the same example they have on their site if you go to the example. But you'd want to use my code because, as I said, it doesn't fight with code that's already in Flare. Those of you that added scripts sometimes to Flare, the programmers don't always write the code the best. So sometimes the way they wrote something fights with somebody else's code. It happens fairly often. So I did adjust this one a little bit so it doesn't interfere with any Flare code. So here's an example. So right now, you know, I've opened this many times in the past. So it says you're a repeat visitor and you visit more than once a day. Yeah, because I opened it this morning to practice. But let's see what it looks like the first time you come in. Okay, so it looks totally different. It's laid out differently. Some things could disappear. Some things could be added. Okay, what about the next time I come in? Now we're back to this one. Okay. Or what if I haven't been in there for a while and I'm curious, what have you added since the last time I was in here? Is this the same old information I saw a month ago? Ooh. Not only does it know that I haven't read the latest info, so again, this isn't some little graphic I put in there that says, hey, this is new. This is new to me because it knows my computer has not been here. And it even says, in case you can't read that purple part, you started reading this 171 weeks ago. Wow. I don't visit very often, do I? Probably hopefully a lot of new content. So it remembers that too, just to tell them. You know, as a reminder. Because I think a lot, I do this, I assume other people do it. I might be thinking, oh yeah, what was that I was reading a couple weeks ago? I need to get back to that. I just remember it. I can come in and say, oh, there it is. There's the thing I was reading because it's telling me. It's helping me find it. You had a, yeah, it might be, what was I reading Friday if you had a fun weekend and you come in on Monday. Maybe that's all you remember. There was something I was reading. It was really interesting Friday. Now that I'm out of jail, let me go read it again. Okay, so this is a real flare example in Flare, and you can use this code too. And all this is adjustable. I mean, this is just a picture. I just picked purple because I knew it would show up on the screen. So you can totally customize that script, aware.js. All right. Now, the other thing I was telling you about in some of these examples is you might have a topic, like I gave the example with that tip. So what if you had a tip that, depending on, say, the user type, maybe the tip only applies to agents. And a developer, it's not the end of the world if the developer sees the tip. It just doesn't apply to them. So it's extraneous information. And, you know, it's going to annoy them if they're constant agent tips scattered everywhere. And they're thinking, I'm not an agent. I want to see developer information. I want to see developer tips, not agent tips. So how can we customize a topic dynamically, or I think even better, letting the user specify their job role or whatever it is, and then based on what they tell us, we customize it rather than trying to predict. Okay. So let's look at how we can potentially show and hide content. Let's see. There's lots of options. So here's some scripts you can try out just to get ideas from a design perspective. And if you like any of these, I know all of these work in Flare. That's one reason I recommended them. But they also show a lot of different perspectives for the design. So here's one. These are all jQuery. A little expand and collapse. Similar to drop-downs. I've got that in Flare. Why are you showing me this? I can make a drop-down. Well, this works a little bit differently. This one also is really good about meeting accessibility guidelines. So that's one of its advantages. So you can try that. Yeah. I didn't make this. I certainly didn't name it. But this kind of goofy name. Yeah, it expands out. So again, if you want to use Flare's togglers or dropdowns, yeah, they work great. There's nothing wrong with them, but this is just a different way to approach it. This one's kind of nice. I could see using something like this on maybe a landing page. It's very graphical. It just depends on your content. But they use this idea of a panel. See how the panel's open? Kind of cool. I've used something like this with tables. So imagine that blue part is the header row of the table, and you can click and the rest of the table opens up. It's, you know, we often have giant tables. If you have a topic that's this long and it's because there's a table this big, you know, the table's pushing everything down. If you just show me the header row, if I want to see the table, I can, and then I can collapse it back down again. All right. And then we have this one. What I wanted to show you about this one, you might not see what's opening and closing. This one's, to me, more like what in Flare we call a toggler, where I'm clicking up here and something's opening down there. See a little brown part that's opening right here when I click here? So they're not beside each other. Okay. So that's just to give you food for thought from the design perspective. Maybe you're more interested in the code perspective. Okay, so here's a simple example. I have that information down there for experts. So this is the... this is the tech writer, writing style, programmer, writing style. And the little button is showing in hide hand. Okay. So this is something, not only could they click on it, but we could also automate that. And as we'll see, once they tell us, hey, I want to see expert stuff, next time they come in, they're already visible. Or if they say they don't want to see it, already hidden. So first of all, how can we do that? I'm going to talk much more about, how many of you are going to the workshops tomorrow? Okay. I'm going to talk quite a bit about this tomorrow, and we'll go through examples. You'll have some hands-on of doing it. But I'll mention here, there's kind of three big ways to do this. I'm going to show you one right now, but they're all very similar. What has to happen here, kind of like a toggler, if you set up a toggler in FLIR, where it says expert info and the sentence there, they have to have what for a toggler is called a name. So you give them a name. But in CSS and HTML, they could also go by a style class, if you wanted, or an ID. Or, bonus features that I will see tomorrow, you could also use what in HTML is called a data attribute, or what might be the coolest FLIR-wise, condition tag. So I'll show you that tomorrow. But what I'm getting at is there has to be something for it to find. When I click the button, it has to know, ooh, you do or do not want to see this stuff. Let me find it based on its ID, its class name, its data attribute, its condition tag, toggler name, whatever. And that's how it shows and hides them. The show and hide is done with the display property in CSS. So the display, if it's set to none, it disappears. And if it's not, you know, if it's set to block or whatever, it's visible. So that's what's happening here. Right? How is it working? Here's the code. I'll make it a little bit bigger for you. Okay, I'll make it real big. So this one is using a data attribute. It says data. That's how data attributes are written. They start with data and then whatever you want to call it. I named it role. You can name it whatever you want. What was that other one? Thinging? Data thinging, if you want. Expandy. Hopefully you pick a cooler name, but whatever you want. So this one says expert. And then this code here is just saying, hey, when somebody clicks this, find everything with this data role and show and hide it. That's all that's going on there. All right, so we saw a couple of techniques, folder switching, and also showing and hiding content like the expert we just talked about. How do we save it? Well, now in HTML, we have a much easier way to save information. We've had cookies for a long time. You can still use cookies, but people try to hack cookies, so people get nervous about them now. They have kind of a bad name. But what they added to HTML is this idea of local storage, like a cookie, but more secure, and it can hold more data, so it works better. And it's not hard to use. I'm going to show you the code behind it. Okay, so let's look at our example. Okay. The way that this works is, first, it detects to make sure the browser supports local storage. If it's a really old browser, it might not know what's going on, but that should be okay. So make sure it works, you know, some error checking here, and it's not full. You can have a lot of information in local storage. If it's full, that would be very unusual, but you have to check that first. And then it can either store a value, read a value, or do something based on the value. And I didn't put it in here. I thought it was self-evident. Of course, you can delete a value but if you needed to. That doesn't come up as often. We look at the site here. Here's the whole documentation about it. I'm going to walk you through it, but we have that as a reference. All right, so here's my example. It's tiny, of course. And let's tie it into what I was talking about earlier with accessibility. What if I want the user to be able to make the text smaller, normal size, or big? And the other option up there is kind of black text, white background, or the inverted white text, a black background. Okay, so as a user, I can come in here and say, oh, wait, I want it to be bigger. I want it to be smaller. using that same script I showed you earlier with the A's, the little A, normal size A, big A. I just wrote it out to make it more obvious. So let's say I like the big one, and I like it like that. All right. It's saved that now in local storage. I have that saved. Hey, it remembered. You can't be that sleepy. I know it's not that exciting, but come on. I was excited that it worked. How much did I say I'd give you to ask that? Is it $5? Yes, it does remember if you refresh. Such a great question. All right, so how does this work? Here's the code. So first you check to make sure local storage works. So it's just, you know, if it doesn't work, it just doesn't run. You don't want to have error message show up or anything. To store it, whatever it is you're storing, I was storing two things, the size, and then high contrast or normal. So you give them names, let's say you name it size, and then the values could be for size, I don't know, small, medium, large, whatever you want to name them. And to get them back, you just say, hey, here's the thing I want to know. So let's say that the key name were size, and my values were small, medium, large. To get it, I just call to it, say get item, in my example, size, and then that gives me the value, and then I can do whatever I want. I can write a script that says, hey, if the value is this, run the code. And then here's how to delete it, remove item. But you don't normally have to, maybe if you're testing, you might delete them, but once they work, you probably don't need to delete the value. It overwrites the value. So every time you do a set item, it overwrites the old value with the new one. So you don't have to delete it, you just overwrite it with set. So that's the code behind it. And we've made it to the end. Yeah. Yes? Do you want to use the mic? So, or you can just yell real loud if you want to. I like that.
Do you have a persistence that you can set on that, like 30, 60 days?
Oh, persistence for the local storage? If you want to get more advanced, you can do that. I don't normally need to do that because, like I was saying, the set can override it, but are you thinking like, hey, after a certain amount of time, I want it to delete and go back to the default? Is that your goal, maybe?
Yeah, let's say that some of your primary viewers are on public computers, say the library.
Oh, okay.
Persist for just a certain amount of time because the next user, you want to reset it in general, like 10 minutes.
Sure, that's a good point. So our question would be, you know, if it's a public computer, because it's saving it on the computer. So if it's a shared computer, you're correct. We could handle that a couple of different ways. You could put in something, maybe when they potentially leave the site or leave the page even, it automatically deletes it then, or have some timer that deletes it. So there's a couple of ways you could have it delete in that situation. Normally my things are more not for public computers, so I don't have to deal with that as much. That's why I didn't cover it. But yeah, you can do that if you need to. Any other questions? Right?
Is it clearable? I mean, some people wanted to. I mean, like, you can clear cookies and all that, right?
Oh, you just totally clear them all out?
Yeah, is there a manual way that the user could say,
oh,
I just want
to... Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could, if you needed to, if you wanted to have some button and let them clear it too. They could, sure.
But not through the browser and any...
We could automatically clear, which is more our first question, but we could also provide that functionality to the user if they needed to clear it out. All of them or just some of the keys, it's up to you. There's been a lot in the EU about privacy and storing data, and this was designed for that, so this meets their requirements as far as, you know, privacy acts and things. So you might have a requirement to let the user click to delete them, yes, but that was something that they were worried about with cookies, so that's why they moved away from them. All right. Well, don't forget that we have that big party coming up. I think, unless it's raining, it'll be outside at Woodstock, so check that out. If you ever do have questions about any of this, as I said, give me a couple of days to put my sample project on my website. It's clickstart.net. It'll also be available when MadCap sends out the recordings. But if you ever have any questions about implementation or anything to do with Flare or just want to bounce ideas off, you're more than welcome to email me anytime you want. Thanks again for attending the session. I hope you had a fantastic conference.